thanks. Yeah, you know, I agree with Bob. You know, this is a very complex issue with a lot of threads, and there's a lot of different perspectives you can take when you look at the issues that you've raised in your presentation. And, I mean, historically, if you look at pensions, pensions, you know, the way I see pensions is a coping mechanism to deal with what, like, how to support yourself once you can no longer work, considering that you can no longer, you know, live off the fat of your land on a piece of land outside of the city. You know, with the development of capitalism and the development of the wage labor force, you know, pensions have arisen, you know, through political struggle as a means to deal with the social question, you know, that was facing policymakers during the 18th and 19th century, right? And pension policy, this is something that Shola Orloff speaks about. Pension policy, you can't talk about pension policies without looking at the poor laws of the 18th century, where basically the poorest people in society, if they wanted help from the state, had to basically be completely, you know, lose their dignity and enter these places where they were basically, you know, abused, and it was a terrible type of environment. So the point I'm trying to make, I guess, is that I don't know if some of these contradictions that you've raised, Kevin, are kind of, you know, if we can provide a solution to them. Rather, I see it as a continuing struggle, you know, when you consider the fact that we do live in a mode of production of capitalism. So this is kind of the broader context. But just let me get a little more specific, and I just want to pose a few questions just to help get discussion going. I want to pose them to you, Kevin, but also to everyone else here. So I come to the issue of pension policy from a more sociological perspective, and you did pay this a little lip service when you were discussing, yeah, you know, when you said that it's more than just a class issue too. There's issues of gender, ethnicity, occupation, those types of things. So I just wanted to pose first question. So the title of your presentation is "Whose Class Power is Represented by Pension Funds?" I would like to ask, can we repose the question of whose gender, generation, and ethnicity is represented by pension funds?
Gender,
so gender, generation, and ethnicity is represented by pension funds. So trying to broaden the analytical focus here beyond class towards, you know, to include other social dimensions. And then I have here, in other words, whose hands do pensions centralize power in, and do you think it's useful to view pensions within a larger framework that goes beyond class to include other forms of inequality? So I think that's one really important question we need to bring this discussion towards. Another dynamic that I find interesting, and maybe we can touch upon this too, is I'm interested in the relationship between pensions, legitimacy, and consent. So is it possible that pensions perform the function of legitimizing forms of neoliberalization by connecting workers' economic security during retirement to the performance of the global financial markets? So if so, you know, is it possible to change this? You know, like, you know, as I don't have a pension fund yet, but hopefully one day I will. Hopefully one day I'll have a job. But, you know, I think most people want to have, ideally, have a comfortable retirement, right? You know, and we're kind of inundated with these cultural images of comfortable retirement, having a retirement home, moving to the Okanagan in BC, you know, having RRSPs, CPP in your occupational plan, you know, think of Freedom 55. We have all these images through media and, you know, just in pop culture of what it means to be happily retired. You know, and how does this affect workers? Right, and how does this affect their desire to have a strong pension plan, and how does this affect their sense of maybe perhaps putting the blinders on it of seeing the larger picture? Well, how is my pension fund maybe hurting the rights of other workers in Canada and internationally? So the issue of consent and legitimacy is something I wanted to bookmark. And just another question that just kind of goes through my mind. I'm also interested in the policymaking process around pensions. So, you know, I'm interested in the debates between provincial and federal governments, and also various non-state actors such as think tanks and business activist groups and other types of lobby groups that try to inform the policymaking process around pension issues. So, just briefly, to what extent do you think policymakers themselves view pension policy as a class issue, and do you think they do? And how might this impact new directions of pension policy today? And also, to what extent does labor inform the current pension debates compared to, say, the 1970s? You know, there's some scholars that, such as John Miles and Paul Pearson, who argue that one of the reasons we're seeing a pension crisis today is that a lot of the pension promises that were made around defined benefit pension plans or gold-plated pension plans were made in the 50s and 60s during a period of rapid economic growth, and it's a way for politicians to kind of to sidestep around contentious issues during kind of industrial relations negotiations. So, you know, we'll give you a nice pension plan. This makes people happy, but this is contingent on people dying at 72 instead of people dying at an earlier age, and also the economy growing at a certain economic rate. So things have changed. People are living longer. The economy has slowed down, and lo and behold, we have a crisis, right? So, I mean, should we be surprised by this? And, I mean, is this, in a way, today's crisis a result of, you know, promises being made 30, 40 years ago that couldn't be kept unless, you know, the global economy continued to grow at 15% a year? So those are just a few questions I wanted to pose, and it may be help initiate some discussion. Thanks.
Thanks, Benjamin. Well, how about we've got, I know, Kevin, you've got a lot in front of you already.